Greetings. Welcome to the Slow Dive podcast. This is Farida, your aspartame-driven host for today. I'm excited about the first roundtable of our podcast, especially because I have a wonderful group of women who inspire me. They're doing some incredible work, and I'm overjoyed that they're participating in today's roundtable. One of the reasons we're including a roundtable format is the Slow Dive is a community-driven initiative. We want to make sure we share our mic, share our space, and have meaningful conversations. Our guiding mission, which I'm going to put on a beanie, sticker, or sweatshirt at some point, is listen, reflect, and connect. Listening, reflecting, and connecting can be an antidote to much of the discord and misunderstanding in our global community. It is critical right now to hold space to agree to disagree, hold space to explain without judgment, and create spaces to have uncomfortable conversations to foster better understanding. The Slow Dive can make its ripple and aim to create a more cohesive, unified, and perhaps ultimately more peaceful world, one conversation at a time. Instead of delving into what's not working in the world, let's focus on how we can make things work. Let's reframe. Today is our first roundtable, and I know a lot of us, myself included, are a little nervous about facilitating this. I hope that we do more of these and touch on more reflection points and have more dynamic people share the mic, share their voice, and for you, the listener, to reflect on it and ask yourself what your thoughts are. It's important to examine our feelings and triggers. What offends us? What lights us up? What makes you cringe? What befuddles you? What is it that you don't know? What must you seek? What makes you happy and why? What makes you angry and why? And then what are you going to do about it? What does that evoke? If we're clear on why we feel things, whether positive, negative, neutral, or just unclear, we can understand why we feel a certain thing. For reference, check out the flywheel of emotions. When we as individuals are bettering ourselves, in turn, we are bettering our community. We can all be wrongly misunderstood, misperceived, and misrepresented. Maybe by breaking bread, coming together, finding commonality, and understanding each other's differences, we can coexist better. The road to understanding is with an open heart and mind. The world is incredibly divisive. Everyone talks about community, but what does it mean to be an active member of one? What does community mean for the individual? And what do good communities look like? The first step today is just to have a conversation. We have an ambitious list of questions. We may or may not get through with them all today, but we will continue our conversation going forward. And I hope you will take an opportunity to reflect with us. Now, let's meet our guests.
Okay, so my name's Diana or Diana Abu Saleh, and I'm a writer, so screenwriter, filmmaker, and educator, and I'm based in Texas. I always like to wait for the pause whenever with that reaction. It's like, okay, Texas. And yeah, so I've been like writing for a while, for about maybe 10 years, and I like to do a lot of like sci-fi, fantasy, like a lot of grounded sci-fi. And I don't like to be like limited by like one genre. I was born and raised in Venezuela, but my family is Syrian. So I like to kind of bring that multicultural experience into my writing. I didn't see a lot of that growing up. I didn't see that. That's kind of why I went into filmmaking. I didn't see someone like myself. It was always this or that. It was very black and white in Hollywood. So that's kind of what brought me into filmmaking. So what is home? I love these prompts, Farida, because it's something that I think about a lot, especially as someone that has moved around a lot growing up. Like growing up, I moved around like 23 times. I was always the new kid. So that question was always at the back of my mind, like, what is home? So right now as an adult, it's definitely just a feeling. It's always looking for that sense of belonging, that sense of peace. It's always changing for me, to be completely honest. Sometimes it's a person, sometimes it's just a memory of something comforting. and sometimes it's a place. But I always revisit this question because I moved around a lot, and I always like to put this in my characters, in my writing.
Wonderful first introduction by you, Diana. I appreciate that. Thank you. Gabby, you're next.
Sure. Well, I'm Gabriela Lagarda. When Diana said she's from Venezuela, I perked up a little bit because I married a Venezuelan from Caracas. So we'll bond about it later. I am born a Mexican, born and raised there. I moved to the U.S. in 2014. Even though I studied marketing back home, I've always been fascinated by music and film and entertainment as a whole. So I decided to move here and studied music business, thinking that I would go into the music industry, but fate brought me to film, which is amazing. It's an industry that I never really thought of exploring as a job, which, you know, and now I love it. I started working at the film company Participant, and I was there for 8 years. Wonderful experience. Unfortunately, if you've seen the news, the entertainment news, the company's shutting down. It's mixed emotions. It's sad because it's, of course, an end of an era for me personally, but also for Hollywood. This is a company that not only makes films, but makes films that create social impact, which is something that I wanted to combine in my life. Aside from that, I volunteer at this organization called San Fernando Valley Refugee Children's Center, which is where Farida and I connected. And well, that's what I've been doing in the past, I guess, almost 10 years since I moved here. I finished my studies. I started working at Participant, and here I am. I definitely feel like home is a state of mind for me. It's, of course, a space, right? Like a physical space, but also somewhere, wherever, where I can feel peace, where I could feel calm. I'm naturally an anxious person, and I'm very hyperactive, so I need my recharging space. And so home could feel, you know, somewhere where I'm with friends and family, or at my own home physically, or back home in Mexico. So I have different homes. So I can't define it as one place physically, but definitely a state of mind where I can feel recharged and peaceful and calm. And that's sort of related to my favorite drink, because I don't drink caffeine. I don't need it, but I do drink my chamomile tea every day to keep me centered and calm. And I believe that one of the things that I think the world is doing right, overall, it seems like every generation will say that their generation went through a lot and it was a crazy world, a crazy time. In our case, even though it is crazy, we went through this whole pandemic trauma as the humanity. I think what we're doing right is that younger generations are really just standing up for themselves, which is something that I hadn't seen before. And it's going at such a fast rate. And I'm very proud of that, and proud of also trying to do the same, right? Standing up for myself when I see something that I don't think is just. And so I think the world is doing that, and it helps us, the older generations, to like wake up a little bit and say, hey, I didn't do that when I was younger, but I'm proud that somebody else is. And I'm being informed now of so many things that I didn't know before. As a human being, as a consumer, as a part of society, I think it's important to be informed. What are the things that we're doing? Probably not the best. And so I think that has opened my eyes, both when I see younger people, you know, younger activists, and also at my work with films that we do with social impact. I'm learning new things all the time and changing my lifestyle for the better. So I think that's what the world, I think, is doing great.
Thank you so much. And that's a great intro as well, Gabby. I'm going to say it's a huge loss for us as a filmmaking community with Participants. We were all shocked when we heard that. So I feel for not only you and the amazing filmmakers that Participant has helped and launched and empowered. It's wild because this is the time we need more participants and a larger participant. And for them to do that, I know it's not them, but you know, it's a scary time, but I'm sorry to hear about that, but I guess we'll just have to create our own participant. Thank you. Emily, you're next. How are you? Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. And Farida and Gabby, I'm very much looking forward to your new participant, whatever it is called. I definitely will come to you. And my name is Emily Montai. I'm a filmmaker and a journalist and writer. and I live in Berlin, Germany. I'm originally from Michigan, and I lived for a long time in Los Angeles, and I have a background in theology and philosophy, and I like to write stories that, from that perspective. Often my stories are inspired by actually a place, a physical location, somewhere that I've visited or been or had a connection with, and that kind of launches the questions about who lives here, what are the problems here, what are the people like here. So I like to sort of work from place and theme usually when I start writing a story. And I do travel writing too, so that's both for screenplays and travel writing. That is sort of my perspective on things. As far as what home is to me, I was thinking of it kind of like a Venn diagram, because it has to include several things. A home for me is a space where I can feel very comfortable being creative by myself, but also where I'm kind of surrounded by and nurtured by other creative people or creative artists. And physically, that kind of looks like it always looks like a place with no mass-produced IKEA furniture. It has to have a lot of personality. And when I can feel the personality of the person who lives in the place, that already feels like home to me, in a place where I can create. I worked for a long time also in art department when I lived in LA. So I think like this, the aesthetics of what a home feels like to me are, you know, really grounded in also film worlds that I've been a part of. You've all given such beautiful answers about what the world is doing right. So maybe I'll talk about what I think the world needs more of. I made a list: wisdom, spiritual evolution, divestment from capitalism, gratitude. These are all just a small start, but my latest kind of hobby horse of call to action is always like, stop using Amazon. Please just stop using Amazon. It's hard for me to meet a person who does not use Amazon, but I think in a way that we can be like more connected to our local communities and actually spend our money in a way that aligns with our values is to stop using Amazon. So that's one way we change the world. And my favorite drink is coffee, but since it's 10 p.m. here, I do not have coffee now. So I went with my second favorite drink, which is a whiskey sour.
Thank you, Emily. You know what? There needs to be like a 12-step program for getting off of Amazon because it is so easy, right? It's so convenient. And I think that's kind of like where the comfort zone and convenience can sometimes hinder society without realizing it. We don't realize the long-term effects of that. But thank you for joining us at 10 o'clock in the evening from Germany, Emily. I had no idea it was 10 o'clock. Sorry. But thank you. Thank you for joining us. And I appreciate that. Diana, I'm going to go back to you before we go to Sam. What's your favorite drink? You didn't tell us.
Yes. It's also depends on my mood. But right now I'm having yerba mate. It's like a type of tea that has caffeine. And it's like, it's very soothing. It's from South America. So there's Brazilian, there's the Argentinian type. But I think I really like it because it has a very bitter taste. So it's an acquired taste, but I really like it. I relate it to like the ritual of making it and like the traditions. So I like that. It has a whole like, oh, you can't boil the water and then you have to add lemon to it. And like, it's a very social drink. And I like little like traditions like that.
No, yerba mate is actually really great for people with anxiety. Like I need a good yerba mate referral because I think the stuff I got is not as great as it should be. But yes, good stuff. Last but not least, our wonderful Samantha Henderson.
All right. Well, I'm going to start with my favorite drink since that's where we led off with. And I have to say that I'm a coffee person. Not a coffee snob, so it doesn't have to be the good stuff, but it can't be Folgers. I'm Samantha K. Henderson. I am a producer. My love for film started as a young child, really with my dad teaching my brothers and I how to tell stories. So I'm a storyteller first. Wanted to write scripts because my mom would pretty much interfere with every cartoon watching, movie watching that we did and tell us, well, you know, somebody had to write that, right? You could do it if you really wanted to. And that's something that rang in my head and stuck with me. So growing up, I saw myself as being a screenwriter, but didn't know where to start there. So when it was time for college, I actually got my degrees in economics and business. Okay. And it took me to be a lot older to finally get into film. But because I'm also like an avid learner, wanted to understand like all parts of filmmaking first. So I've done everything from like camera, DP work, lighting. If you look at my IMDb, a lot of sound is there, and directing, and I write. So what led me to producing really is just the love of, you know, being able to organize, bring people together. Community building is really ingrained in me. So it doesn't matter like where I fit into society at any given time. Like I'm always trying to build and bring people together. So anyway, producing allows me to not carry heavy gear. So I have had to let go of like the sound work and DP work so that I could save my back. And that has led me here where I am today as an independent film producer, podcast host, and producer, and looking to jump into events.
Thank you, Sam. And you're great at events. I just want to give a shout out. Okay, the first word I'm going to give to the whole group is wonderment. What does the word wonderment prompt you to feel? When was the last time ever in your history you felt wonderment? And can you share that example of wonderment?
The first thing that came to my mind was just, I equate that word with like just feeling very curious too, in addition to feeling like that sense of awe. And it was actually very recently that I felt that very strongly. And it was during the eclipse on April 8th. It also happened to be my birthday during the eclipse. And I was working, I'm in a writing program. So I was working on this pilot. And I had been feeling very stuck. I have enough self-awareness to know that it's just the narrative that I tell myself, you're stuck because you want to be stuck in the writing process. I'm sure if you like think about it, like something can come up. So all that to say that like during the eclipse, and I had never experienced an eclipse before, like because in Texas, it was a full eclipse, right? It was just amazing. And Farida knows that I'm like a nerd about this stuff, like all the sciencey stuff. And I do believe that there's like a meaning behind this. And even if you don't believe that these things have meaning, like I felt this deep sense of curiosity and awe because it just reminded me like the universe is so big and we are so small. Like I was just so anxious about being stuck with my writing and not, you know, it was to the point that I had a lot of anxiety about not coming up with something, not having the answers. And it was just very humbling. Like, this is beautiful. Just appreciating the moment. This is amazing. I had goosebumps. Like, it was just a beautiful experience. Even though my mom was like, you've already seen this before when you were like 5. So that, I guess that's my answer. It was just the eclipse and it was a beautiful experience.
Thank you. Yeah, that is definitely a sense of wonderment.
I mean, I have the sense of wonderment all the time. I am also a very curious person, but also I do a lot of introspection. And that has happened a lot lately on a personal level. But of course, as I mentioned earlier, with the company shutting down, that, you know, prompted me to start thinking about what do I want to do next? Is this, you know, is this the path I want to continue? What kind of chapter am I opening in my life now? And so all these questions and curious to know, like, is this because I kind of wished for having a little bit of a break. I didn't expect the break to come this way. But I was wishing to stop for a second and reflect and look back and look forward and see, you know, which direction I want to go now. And so now that I have been kind of forced to do that, I have been spending a lot of time with myself and thinking about, yeah, what I want to do next. What do I envision for myself? And also it's a little bit related to what we were talking about what we're doing right as, you know, as a society, but also what is missing out there. To Emily's point, I think I agree with her. There's a lot of compassion that is missing, and also connection, and like all sorts of things that are more on a spiritual level, because I agree with that, and or consciousness and all sorts of things. And so that is, I think, intertwining with my desire to do something new. And so I have not gotten to the answers yet, but definitely have been wondering about these things and asking myself all these questions. And so I hope to at one point get to the beautiful conclusion on what I want to do next, but also I want to do something that is needed out there, not just for the sake of having a job. Of course, I want to pay my bills, but I also want to include that if possible. And if it's not as part of my day job, then of course I'll continue doing that on the side. But yeah, I think that's the last time, which was like not long ago. The last time I felt this way.
Thank you. You're seeking now. You're open to possibilities and you're searching and you're seeking. And that's definitely a great place to be in, because that means there's a lot of new beginnings in front of you. So wonderful.
I love the idea that curiosity is part of wonderment, that you feel sort of like in awe in being curious. And it got me thinking that many times when I go to a new place, there is that, especially if you go to a new place and then you end up staying there for a while, there's just like this first moment or the first day or the first few days that you're there that you feel like everything is new. Walking into a grocery store is so special, or anything that you do for the first time. I remember when I first moved to Berlin, it was in January. It was really, really cold, but I would spend like 2.5 hours just walking down every street. And like everything I saw was like, oh, that graffiti is so cool. Oh, that look is so cool. And I think just like that newness is something that I've definitely experienced, in that sort of like awe. And again, in how big the universe is, like how many places that we have not yet seen or explored. And another thing that came to mind was I grew up in a non-denominational evangelical Christian church, which is sort of like what we would call low church. It's not very ritualistic. It doesn't have liturgy. So the first time I went to an Episcopal Easter Saturday service was really awe-inspiring to me, because it starts out, it's completely dark. There's a candle that kind of is carried up as the cantor is chanting. And then you hear all of these stories that kind of take you through the story of the Bible up until the death of Christ. And then suddenly the lights turn on, everybody's given like bells, everybody just starts yelling and screaming, and Christ is risen. It's this dramatic moment. And I love this whole like theatrical storytelling element of that service, that's like definitely like a moment of explosive awe and wonderment. And most especially the very first time I participated in that, I was just talking with some friends about like how that is in Orthodox services, which is I think even more extreme. But that was something that came up for me as well.
It's beautiful. Thank you.
Okay. So my experience is that maybe I experience the wonderment a little differently. I tend to live in the moment. So I'm constantly doing, right? So when you're doing something, you're expecting results. And when you get them, it's like, good, move on to the next thing. But I could recall being on a trip, this is 2018, being in Egypt and touching a structure that had been there for 5,000 years. And I can't imagine being able to do that here anywhere in the United States. So if we do have a structure that has survived, I haven't been exposed to it. So that in itself was one of the first times in my life where I felt taken aback a bit, but in a positive way. And I just felt it in my soul. It was, wow, somebody so long ago constructed this building. That means so many people have passed through, have touched, have had experiences and lived something, whether it was grand or not, so many times in the structure that we would never know. Like if the walls could talk, I don't even think we'd have enough time to hear all the stories. And that I felt in my soul. And tears kind of came down like the first time, like, you know, so you have this grand, oh, you're in a new place. I had never been to the Middle East before. You're seeing how people live and it's very different from us. But then you get to this place that is so ancient and special to, well, at least to me, it was that all I could do is just feel like this deepness in my soul. And that has lasted all this time. And it actually makes me want to do more and do better. Like, could I possibly leave a mark on the world like that? And I'm going to try until the day that I die.
I love how everyone brought in like compassion and spirituality and beliefs, also giving them like that, invoking that awe inspiring moment. My wonderment, it's something I just lately, it's a recent thought, and I'm going to share it with you because of what's happening in the global conflict around the world right now. And there's so much suffering in different parts of the world, and not to get too political, but we all know there's war and strife and suffering. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Banksy. I'm pretty sure you are. Banksy has this one image with on a wall dividing countries and people. And the image is of a girl in a balloon just kind of escaping into, and it's a shadow, and the little girl is trying to hold on to the balloon. And I've seen that image many times over time. I'm a huge fan of Banksy. Huge fan. But I saw it recently, again, online, of course, and it made me cry. And I'll tell you why. Not because all this suffering is happening, because that's unfortunate. Like, we're not immune to it. It is happening. But I, for once at my age, correlated that balloon to like a birthday balloon. And maybe someone else has too. But I was like, okay, is that how our soul feels like? We're tethered to like the ethers, and then a balloon is just like this amazing. Is that why children get excited about balloons on birthdays? Because it's really just like our soul experience, and it's fleeting. And that once the balloon pops, it goes away and it goes back into the sky, the healing. And I really had to, I'm like, wow, I'm looking at balloons in a completely different way. And I am now examining Banksy's art in a completely different way, outside of the political framework that he used, which is, you know, obviously what we're dealing with, right, in the world, where there's a lot of division and vilifying and othering and all that horrible stuff that makes us think that we're separate from one another. But then you see this balloon and you think every baby's birthday party has balloons. Every gender reveal party has balloons. Every bridal party, any balloons are celebratory, but what are we celebrating? Life, right? But what does that mean when you see it on a concrete wall? And that actually moved me years later, although that image has been like, you know, etched in my brain forever because it's like very popular. Banksy's artwork is like, everyone knows about it, but it brought new meaning to me. And I was like, wow, birthdays just mean something different where you are. And maybe a balloon is just a way that we're tethered to the where we all go back to. And that little space in the balloon represents more than that. I was like, oh, my gosh. But that made me cry. And I don't have any kids or anything. But I know as a child, and we've all had birthday parties, or balloons are so joyful. And to see that in a in a war-torn state. And that just happens to become art, you know, that then people just, you know, we make art books and coffee on it and place them on coffee tables. It just gives a whole other experience and meaning. So that's my latest wonderment. And I saw something with a new pair of eyes that kind of struck me. And now I'll never look at a balloon the same way again, ever. I'll be like, oh, I need something different. Okay. Can you recall a time in your life recently or when you were younger, you had to minimize or dilute your personality? Why do you think you had to do that? What circumstances or events signaled to you that I cannot be myself 100% right now? Can you recall a time in your life recently or when you were younger that you had to minimize or dilute your personality? Why do you think you had to do that? What circumstances or events signaled to you that I cannot be myself 100% right now? And I mean, there's words that we can use such as masking. People mask a lot, and that could be applied in different ways, whether it's out of safety, whether it's out of, you know, situational circumstances. So that's one way of looking at it. But or it could just be from a social place, like where you felt like you had to, because if you didn't do that, then what would happen? Or it could also come from a place of empowerment. You were perhaps not ready, maybe society or maybe early relationships or just your surrounding, your community never empowered you to feel like, yeah, I do have my voice, I can share. So it's really open to interpretation. And so think about that. That is the invisible versus visible, because that those are the themes. Are you being gaslit? Did you not feel safe? Did you feel like you didn't have the right amount of information? Did you think you're not an expert? You have to be an expert to speak on this experience? I don't know. It could be anything. Yes, Gabby.
It seems to me like that as women, I think we tend to do that, but I'm not going to put words in your mouth. But in my experience, being the oldest child, I've learned as an adult that when I was younger, the way that I reacted to family situations was that I had to grow up really fast and take on a lot more than a young kid should. And so I think slowly, even though my personality always pushed through, I do feel like I would try to be more in control of myself and therefore a little bit less of, you know, the free spirit that I think I am. And so that's sort of like part one that I acknowledge now as an adult. And I guess the anxiety and the other feelings came from feeling unsafe when I was younger and then trying to put up a mask, like you were saying, Farida, as like being in control, being, you know, collected and always doing the right thing. So as the oldest child in a chaotic household, I sort of had to do that. And now as an adult, I'm learning to embrace my inner child and to sort of like let go of that. But it a second time happened again. And I think since we are all creatives, I believe you will understand the story. But on the side, I also like writing music. So as in my early 20s, I was writing music and singing and sort of trying to create a career out of that before I went into the whole film industry. And so in that particular experience, now that I'm looking back, I realized how much I was changing of myself in order to please other people and also particularly those who were gatekeeping that dream of mine or that opportunity that I wanted. And so I definitely, now that I look back, I see it. At the moment, I did not see it. I felt strong and I felt that I had an opinion and I felt that I was being myself and I was making my own decisions. But now, many, many years later, I'm thinking, wow, I don't think I was. I thought I was strong and independent and, you know, and had an opinion, but I don't think I was. I think I was modifying myself to navigate that situation. And it feels, I felt like a delayed frustration because now I'm thinking, wow, those people who were gatekeeping these opportunities for me took advantage of that and really, you know, asked me to be a certain way, even sing a certain way, or like write about a particular theme or a kind of music. And in your case, it probably is a kind of story or a kind of, you know, a genre of film, etc. But in my art form, I guess it was writing songs and music. And so I was changing all that. I was changing my taste. I was changing my, even the genre that I was singing. I don't like that, you know? And I never did. I was just doing it because I really wanted it so bad. And so after that experience, just to close the loop, just so you know, it didn't work out, obviously. My intuition told me at one point, this is too much, get out of here. So it really was like there were a lot of teeny, teeny micro things that happened. But in the end, the huge red flag was just like, get out of here. It's not worth your time. And I listened to that, my inner voice, and I left. And so I didn't go through with that opportunity. I changed like a lot of things. Now, like as an adult, I still do that as a hobby, and it's a great source of like creative like release. And so now I'm glad that I listened to my inner voice, and I'm glad that I sort of came back to my personality and my taste in my art, which was, you know, music and singing and writing. So now I can happily say that I followed that route, and I ended up doing what I initially wanted to do under my own terms. Of course, on the side, as you know, as a freelancer with my own budget, my own money, but it's okay because in the end, it was true to who I was. So that's my little
story. I love that. Well, now you have time to reclaim that and write music and sing again. Are you going to do that?
Maybe. I don't know. I would love to write a musical. That is like my dream.
We have a room full of producers and writers and directors here. So you never know. Put that out there. That's wonderful. So you're reclaiming that and you decided it wasn't for you.
Gabriella, I definitely can relate to that a lot. First of all, about the musical, I have a friend who's writing a musical because he's turning 50 and he's always been in theater. So he's like, I'm just going to write a musical for my birthday and make my own musical. So I totally think you should go for that. But I that brings up to me, your whole story brings up the idea that like to succeed in a creative industry, sometimes we feel like we have to just do what the industry demands, fit your work into a genre or what is wanted, or when you're pitching a story, why now is the question that you should always answer in the story. And as I'm getting a little bit older, people now ask me to like be a mentor to them. Like I sort of freelance at film school sometimes, and some of the film students ask me to be a mentor. And I think about like what I would have done differently in my 20s. And I'm wondering like, what do they want? Like, why do they want to be in the film business? Is it because they just desperately want to make a movie, any movie, be part of the industry? Or is it that they have something to say? And if it's something specific that you have to say, that you want to say, that you feel is important, that you feel like the world needs you to say, and yet you go over here and do, you know, just the thing that you need to get there. It's like, it's such a catch-22, because how are you ever going to be able to say the thing that you want to say if you don't go and, you know, work at CAA in the mailroom, or, you know, do whatever steps people tell you you need. And that was sort of my loop that I circled in when I lived in LA. I worked on independent films and art department and thought like, well, maybe this is the way to like get in and get up. I was really paying attention to the directors. What are they like? I knew that I wanted to direct films. I also knew, I knew enough in my 20s to know that I didn't have anything to say yet. But I thought maybe this is the way to get there. And I was always kind of caught in this. I have something that I'm passionate about. I have something that I feel wants to be said. But what I have to do to go over there and get the industry to listen to me or let me make it is something totally different that I don't want to do, or that doesn't align with my values, or doesn't align with who I am. And either it's just spend 6 to 10 to 12 years of just masking in order to then get what you want, or go off somewhere else and do it maybe as a hobby. Or I mean, I kind of call filmmaking my full-time hobby because I don't make my living from filmmaking. I make it from journalism and writing. So I'm kind of masking, I guess.
Sam, did you want to add?
So I feel like I am always masking regardless of my circumstance because I have a pretty strong personality. And the one thing that I hate the most is to see a person or animal be mistreated. And so as a young child, I would be that person to stand up, you know, and say, you're not going to treat me like that. But I also do it for a kid that I didn't know. Like, you're not going to be a bully around me. So I guess like if we lived in Gotham, I'd be the vigilante, maybe like Batwoman or something. I don't know. But because I live in the real world, I found that I have to restrain myself. I have to sometimes speak up and sometimes not, because in instances where I have spoke up on someone else's behalf, that person has turned to me and said, I didn't ask you to do that. And I suffered negative consequences from that action. Whether right or wrong, a lot of times I will see something that I don't like or that I think is wrong. And I have to, in each case, weigh out, when do I activate Samantha and not stand for it? Or when do I just step back and let that person speak up for themselves? A lot of times I'm the only Black woman, you know, and so there is a stereotype of like the angry Black woman or the strong Black woman. I'm definitely not angry. I have nothing to be angry about. Strong, yeah, maybe, but not so strong that, you know, I need to be beat up on. And so I'm also fighting those stereotypes a lot of times, but I just try to look at the world a little different. And like I said earlier, be in the moment. And so it's a constant, you know, analyzing the circumstances and situations. I'm definitely more mature. And so I've learned to respond, I think, appropriately. But I would say this is something that I'm constantly dealing with. Like even in a family dynamic, you know, strong personality, you want to solve everybody's problems, but it's really not my job to do that.
So I wanted to add that. So I definitely agree with Samantha. It's also something that I'm constantly struggling with. I feel like I was trying to figure out like how to condense it, because I feel like this is the story of my life, where I've always, growing up, I've always had to like minimize my personality because of this or that. And I guess, so I'll just stick to this example. So when I was young, I was diagnosed with epilepsy, and it was the way that my family viewed it, because I was raised very conservative, and it was this very taboo thing. So it was the narrative that I got as a child. Like I always thought like, oh, there's something wrong with me, so I have to have this like hidden from the world, you know. So it was always this part of me that I resented until like an adult. So it was like in my like late 20s that I was able to accept this part of, like, you know, the epilepsy. And it took like a traumatic experience for me to accept it and be able to talk about it like I am talking about it now. You know, this is actually the first thing I thought about when Farida asked the question. So I'm always someone that's like, you know, you have to, and I think that's what this podcast is about, like, you know, showing up authentically. So I think that sounds like I'm going to talk about this. It did affect the way like I had to change my personality, and I felt like I wasn't being true and like my authentic self. And just adding, like, being a filmmaker in a conservative family where I didn't have like a role model, like no one had done that before. So it was always like the weird kid, and I didn't feel like I could be myself until I was an adult. So I definitely had a lot of experiences like that where I couldn't show up as myself. But I think that made my writing better, because that's where I could express myself in my writing and in my characters. And it's just part of growing pains, you know?
Thank you for sharing that, Diana. Everyone made some really great points, and I learned a lot. I want to just, before we close this segment out and take a break, I was going to say, how do you guys feel about this image of the strong woman? Like, can a person be perceived as strong? And I see this a lot, and it goes in all cultures, everyone, but maybe, yes, maybe in your experience, of course, as you illustrated so beautifully, I think people sometimes, when you show up as a strong person, they almost assume that you're not a sensitive person. And sometimes you're a strong person because you have to be strong. It was kind of like you had no other choice. You had no support, or you had little support. So in order to figure life out, you have to then wear that mask. But how many strong people are always strong? How do you think they became strong? It's like a muscle, right? Like, it's like you endure and then you become resilient. And that is where the strength comes from, because it's your emotional capacity building. The more crap you've endured, the more crisis you've been undergone, the more, you know, issues you've had to deal with or contend with, they test your spirit. And that's how you become strong. So then you show up always as a strong person, because you built that muscle through resilience that then people assume, well, and I see this with a lot of, if you want to use the label alpha female, outgoing females, empowered women. But I think both men and women in general, we are all strong. Unfortunately, when we see a strong woman, and I've seen this in sometimes in my culture and even amongst men, they will treat a strong woman like she doesn't have a sensitive side to her. I'm like, hey, I'll speak from my experience. I show up strong because I had to be strong. I had no other choice. It's a kind of a survival mask. And that's just for me. And I live in a, quote, privileged first world country, right? With plumbing and electrical grid system and all that. But imagine women in other countries with other set of circumstances or other issues. I feel like, you know, when people just write off people as just being strong, like they're heartless, maybe they're not. Maybe they're just so used to masking and staying in their strength because they weren't allowed to be soft or allowed to lean back because they had no support. So in order to survive in this world, you just show up strong. That's the one thing I know, that people don't just become strong. It's not like they're born strong. They become strong. And when we see a strong person, I think we should be like, hey, I am inspired by that, but let's not cancel out our, like, I guess our empathy for them, because we notice it. It's so, well, this person never smiles. This person always has an answer. They're always prepared. Why do you think that is? Why do you think they're always prepared? I mean, for many, like just in our group today, like Gabby, Diana, Emily, you guys have traveled. You've lived in different countries. You're living in a different country. There's a certain set of skills that you have to develop to go to a whole different country and to figure it out and adapt. That takes strength and resiliency. People make it look easy. You don't have to talk about how hard it was at the beginning and how scared you were, or how, like, and it doesn't even have to be like just going to city, but like, and I say this in the broader thing, like, I think one of the things that I feel like when people just kind of write off things, it must be nice, or that person's just strong, we kind of discount the events that led them up to that strength. We also minimize their experience to why they are the way they are and how much work went into that, because they're not going to tell you, because they've just emerged strong. And I think that's a space we need to hold for people.
From sharing spaces and conversations with a varied group of empowered women, you can feel the sense of community in this little mutual agreement of being open and safe to share. As we continue our roundtable into our next episode with Diana, Emily, Samantha, and Gabby, I am going to leave you with some reflection questions to answer on your own. When did you have a moment of awe and wonderment? How long has it been? When was the last time you felt at home with someone? When did you last dull your personality or self-silence? Thank you for tuning in. I'm Farida. This is The Slow Dive. Let's make an impact one episode at a time.